Okay, so that's a little overview of the text. Again, what I'd like to do before I get into the actual nitty-gritty of the text is just talk a little bit about some basic Buddhist principles so we have the background and we know the setting from and the worldview from which Shantideva is speaking. And I've noticed that His Holiness the Dalai Lama always begins teachings by giving this kind of background, talking about the Four Noble Truths, the Four Seals, the Two Truths, these kinds of things, to make sure that the people who are listening really have the framework, the Buddhist worldview. And I think this is really, really important because what comes afterwards, all the teachings we hear, only make sense if we have the Buddhist worldview. Okay? If we don't have the worldview, then the teachings, they sound wonderful, but we don't really value them and we don't know how to put them into practice. And I see this actually happening a lot with people who want very high teachings. You know, everybody comes in, I want the highest teaching. You know, if you come in the Tibetan tradition, I want to hear about Mahamudra and highest class Tantra and Dzogchen and give me initiations. I want the high teachings, you know. But that these people hear all these high teachings and maybe even sometimes they remember some words, but when it comes to their daily life, they don't know what to live. How to live, how to make their life meaningful. And that's because they don't have the worldview. Okay? So I want to talk a little bit about this worldview. Okay? Now, to understand the Buddhist worldview, we have to understand what the mind is. Okay? So when I say the word mind, I'm not talking about the brain. The brain is the physical organ. Okay, the brain you can see with scientific instruments. You can measure the electricity in the brain. You can measure the serotonin and the dopamine and the various chemical reactions in the brain. But the brain is not the mind. The brain is part of the body. The mind is something totally different. The mind is what makes us living beings. Okay? Most of you have probably seen dead bodies. You know, a dear one has died. When you look, the body of your loved one is there, but they're not there, are they? Something's missing. What is it that is missing that makes it so that the person is no longer there? It's their consciousness, their mind, okay? So that's the thing that is present or absent that makes somebody a living being. Because the brain is still there in the corpse, but the mind is not there. Okay? The mind is unlike the brain in that the mind is not atomic. It's not made of atoms and molecules. It's not made of material. The definition of mind is clear and aware. Okay? So clear means, it can mean that it's formless. In other words, it's not made of matter. Clear can also mean that it has the power to reflect objects. Okay? And then the other quality of mind is that it's aware or it's knowing, which means that it can know objects. It can engage with objects. So this whole ability to reflect and engage with various objects, that's what makes a sentient being. That's the definition of mind. Okay? So the mind, by its very nature, can know objects. Yeah? And from the mind side, just by it being clear and knowing, there's the potential for it to reflect and engage in all objects, absolutely everything that exists. However, as sentient beings now, our minds are very obscured, and that obscuration prevents us from knowing everything. Okay? So we have the potential to be omniscient, but we're not omniscient right now because the mind's obscured. what is it that obscures our mind? It's not like a blindfold that prevents our eyes from seeing. It's not kind of some physical obscuration, but it's the obscuration of wrong conceptions, the obscuration of ignorance, the obscuration of disturbing attitudes and negative emotions. So these kinds of wrong views and distorted consciousnesses obscure the clear and knowing nature of our mind so that we can't see everything. These afflicted states of mind, these disturbing attitudes and negative emotions, also cause us a ton of suffering. So they not only obscure the mind so we can't actualize our potential, but they also cause us a great deal of suffering. Yeah. When our mind is overwhelmed by ignorance, then we're dull. We can't engage. We become close-minded. Yeah. And this ignorance misconceives who we are. So it develops a whole lot of wrong ideas about who we are. We think that there's some solid concrete thing that's me. Okay? We think that there's a soul or that there's some essence of meanness there when there isn't. Okay? So we're holding on to some independent person. We're an independent person. Everybody else is an independent person. Everything we see and engage in is independent. It has its own nature. So this kind of wrong conception is what we call ignorance. Yeah. We often don't realize it because we've been ignorant so long that we think it's normal. Yeah. But there's a lot of repercussions to this kind of ignorance. So one of them is, if we think that there's a very solid person that's me, a real me here, then, of course, my happiness becomes the most important thing. So then attachment arises. Yeah. So attachment is a mind that exaggerates the good qualities of someone or something, and it craves and clings and wants. Okay? So attachment, I call it the bubblegum mind. Yeah, because you know how bubblegum sticks to everything? That's the mind of attachment. Yeah? The mind of attachment sees something and like, oh, this is good. I want it for myself. You know? Okay, so we get this mind that's very greedy, that's very clingy, that's craving, that's, you know, just full of desire, yeah? Now, we shouldn't confuse attachment with having positive aspirations, because positive aspirations are very useful, they're very beneficial. Okay, so if you have a positive aspiration to develop a kind heart, a positive aspiration to become a Buddha, those aren't attachment. Those are good aspirations to have, because there's no exaggeration involved when you aspire to become a Buddha. Okay, or if you aspire to develop a kind heart, you're not exaggerating the value of a kind heart and clinging to it in an unrealistic way. Okay, instead you're having a positive aspiration. On the other hand, when we think of other things, for example, money, then our mind really exaggerates, you know, and we have a lot of wrong conceptions about money and we get attached to it. So what kind of wrong conceptions? Well, we think that money is the meaning of life. You know, if I have a lot of money, then my life is valuable. That's a wrong conception. Yeah. Or we think that money brings happiness. But, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of money that are not very happy. Okay. So you can see that when we get attached to something, there's exaggeration involved. And that exaggeration creates the clinging. And then the clinging creates a lot of suffering, because when we can't get what we want, then we're unhappy. Or when we can't when we do get what we want, but then we're separated from it later on, we're unhappy. Or if we get the opposite of what we want, we're unhappy. Okay? So we can see how the clinging, the attachment, creates a great deal of suffering in our life. I mean, you can all experience this, can't you? You know, because we've all had the times of saying, oh, I want this, I want this, I want this, and we can't get it. And then we're totally miserable. And not only are we miserable, but then we get angry. Okay? The world's unfair. I want this, and I can't get it. You know, the world's unfair, and this is all everybody else's fault. You know, and then we get really upset and our behavior becomes quite obnoxious. Okay? So this is why when we talk of the three poisonous minds, these are the three we're talking about. First of all, ignorance. Okay? That gives rise to clinging attachment. Okay? Because we want our own happiness. And then when we can't get our own happiness, then we get angry or hostile. So anger and hostility are the third of the three poisonous attitudes. Okay? So those three, and then of course, all of their branches, they become the things that obscure our mind and prevent us from being happy. Okay? So, when the Buddha taught, he described these things and he taught the way to happiness. So the Buddha did not create the path to happiness. He simply described it. Yeah. So here we see a big difference between Buddhism and the theistic religions. In theistic religions like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, there's a creator God who created everything. Okay? In Buddhism, there's no external being that is a creator. Okay? Instead, we say that it's our own mind that creates. Our mind creates what we experience. Our mind creates our happiness and our suffering. And when we're suffering, the part of our mind that's doing the creation there is the ignorance, anger, and attachment. When we experience happiness, the part of the mind that's creating that is the mind that's kind and generous and wise. Okay? So we can see that there's a fundamentally different approach here in Buddhism than in theistic religions. Because in the theistic religions, if there's a creator God, then we only exist because God made us. And then the way to happiness is to propitiate God, to make prayers, to praise God in the hope that God will do something good for you. Yeah? And so that's the way that you practice. That's the path in the theistic religions. In Buddhism, it's not like that. We don't pray, we don't petition any kind of external being to bring us happiness, because we don't believe that an external being is the cause of our suffering. Okay? We stay instead, it's our own distorted minds which are the cause of suffering. Because if some other being were the cause of suffering, there's a lot of logical fallacies that come about there. Okay? So as Buddhists, you know, we really use reason and logic in our path. And so for that reason, we don't assert any kind of external creator. But instead, what creates happiness and misery is our own mind. Okay? So our own mind creates happiness and misery in two ways. One way is just by how we interpret the thing and how we relate to an object right now. Okay? So if I exaggerate an object, the value of an object, then I create suffering for myself because I develop so much longing and wanting and craving and clinging. If I exaggerate the negative qualities of an object, then I suffer right now because my mind's full of anger and resentment and holding a grudge. Okay? So that's one way the mind creates happiness or, well, in that case, suffering. Okay? Another way that the mind creates our suffering is that through the mind we do actions. Okay? The actions or karma that we do, they're done physically, verbally, and mentally. And and the actions we do leave traces of energy. Those are like what we call karmic seeds or karmic imprints. So we do all sorts of different actions, but the actions cease, but these seeds and imprints are left on our mind. And when other conditions come in our life, these seeds will ripen and bring about what we experience. So if we act out of ignorance, anger, and clinging attachment, then we're planting negative karmic seeds in our mind stream. And then that is what brings about unhappiness and misery and difficulties in our life. Okay? So do you see how the problems come about in two ways? One through the creation of karma, and one through how we interpret something that's happening right now. In a similar way, our mind can create happiness, because when we have realistic attitudes and emotions that are beneficial, then our mind is happy right now. And in addition, we create positive actions, positive karma. And then when that karma ripens, it brings the results of happiness. Okay? So in Buddhism, that's why we say our mind is the creator. And that's why the path that we practice is a path of transforming our own mind. Okay? So in Buddhism, the Buddha really emphasized being responsible for our own actions. We don't blame an external being like a devil or a demon for our own negative mind states. We take responsibility for them. We don't pray to some external being to fix us, because we have to be responsible and transform our own mind. So I think this is really, for me anyway, this was really the beauty of the Buddha's teachings when I encountered them. Because if all of our happiness and suffering depends on other beings, be it sentient beings or a creator God, then we're really stuck. Because whatever we experience depends on somebody else, so we don't have any control. But the Buddhist, when he looked at our happiness and suffering, he said, actually, we're the ones who are responsible for it. So if we're responsible, that means that we have control and we have some choice. We can create the causes of happiness and we can abandon the causes of suffering. So this is our choice, it's our responsibility, okay? So it's kind of a double-edged sword here, because we have a lot of power to really influence what we become, but it means we also have responsibility. If we have responsibility, it means we can't blame anybody else for our misery, okay? And sometimes we like blaming other people for our misery, don't we? Yeah? It can be somehow comforting, Oh, I have so many problems because all these other people, look what they do. They're so obnoxious. Why am I unhappy? Because this person's rude and that one is so obstinate. That one's stubborn. And that one doesn't appreciate me. That's why I'm so unhappy, because I'm such this wonderful, fantastic person. And I really try hard. I'm so good. And nobody appreciates me enough. Don't you feel that way? Yeah, come on. You can admit it. We're all in the same boat. We feel like, I'm just such a nice person and my family doesn't love me enough. They don't appreciate me enough. And I go to work and I work so hard and all my boss does is criticize me, And I really, if I go to school, if I'm a student, I study so hard and all my parents and teachers say is, oh, you don't try hard enough. Nobody appreciates me. You know? So we get into this big thing of feeling sorry for ourselves. Or, if we don't feel sorry for ourselves, we get angry at all these other people who don't realize how wonderful we are. Okay? So you can see that this whole attitude of thinking that our happiness and suffering comes from outside, it puts us in a difficult position because we make ourselves into victims. You know, I'm this victim because my happiness and suffering depend on somebody else who I can't control. So then I can get mad at the other person, but of course that doesn't do anything except make them mad at me back. Or I can sit here and sniff and whine and moan, you know, and feel sorry for myself, but that doesn't do anything either. Okay? So you see this whole strategy of thinking that happiness and suffering comes from outside, it doesn't work. Yeah? When we adopt that view, we are living in a prison of our own making. Okay? And the prison is our wrong view, thinking that somebody else creates our happiness and suffering. So the beauty of the Buddha's teaching is the Buddha said, no, we're the ones that create it. So we're responsible, we have to change. Yeah. So this is also the good news, is that we can change.